Welcome back to High Hash Rate. Before we get started, we wanted to remind you that we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. The Bitbox O2 is a secure, open source, Bitcoin only hardware wallet. In my opinion, it's got the best user experience in the industry. As always, you can use the promo code High Hash Rate. We get 5% off your purchase. Or you can go to bitbox.swiss/high hash rate, no spaces. And you can find that in the show notes. Remember, Bitbox has great customer support. And if you DM me on Twitter or Noster, I'm always available to answer your questions about self-custody and now UTXO management. So there we go. Bitbox, check them out.
Ah, screw it, here we go.
Bitcoiners are going to be enormously represented in the population that survives and moves on. That's what's happening right now, is Bitcoin is pre-selecting for the people that are going to be adaptable enough to survive this. So yeah, like, it's scary. The world's a scary place. But yeah, guess what? We're adults. We're men. Buckle up, put your fucking big boy pants on, and let's handle it.
I would say we are a society of weak men. And I think, I like what Business Cat just said. It's like, we've been unaccountable. Because of fiat money, we have been unaccountable. What Bitcoin is coming to do is to bring accountability, and it's going to select, like, basically the people that understand that shit are going to make it.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. So it turns out that we filmed episode 100, which is kind of a big milestone, right? But I didn't even realize that. I've just been like so zoned out, so busy dealing with so much stuff, traveling. I'm like, oh yeah, we filmed the 100th episode. We didn't even acknowledge it. I don't think we even referenced it one time on there.
We have not done it.
And the only reason
we haven't
that
filmed
I,
it. Sorry. Go ahead.
Then why is that? I thought this was episode 103. But this
I did
is the whole
want to
point
get into
of this,
by the way,
being the episode.
I understand. I did want to get into this.
You emailed me and you said we're doing episode 103 with
we are doing
the
episode
103,
but that was not my request.
Well, that's because I treat episode numbers on your show like ordinals.
Oh, gotcha. Well, so you know, I'm stoned. So this is how it normally goes. Mike's usually the one that says something crazy. We haven't filmed episode 100 yet, so that's why we haven't acknowledged it, and I didn't go past it. So we'll talk about 103 in the numbers relevance on that episode.
You guys
so that'll be like 2 months from now.
Maybe we should just take 100. If it hasn't happened.
Interesting.
Yet.
Okay.
There you go.
So can we say that this is episode 100? So can we acknowledge?
That'd be pretty awesome.
I kind of wanted to.
It is like ordinals. We just get
case,
to make it what
to be
we
honest.
Want.
I wanted you guys to be the 100th episode.
That's what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be. Fuck yeah. So
episode
100, dude. So celebrate.
When he scored 100 points and his heels up a sign
there you
and says 100.
All right, so Dan, finish your opening. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off there.
Well, now that this is episode 100, this is awesome. This is a celebration. We got the guys from from the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast. This was the number six podcast on Fountain last week. Congrats on that. You guys made the top 10 on episodes and
that was
hot
great.
Shows. So that was pretty awesome.
Congrats,
that was pretty cool.
That was wonderful.
It's a great show too.
Have you guys seen
like a big boost in like new engagement or like new people coming in and boosting you or like talking shit in the comments? Talking praise. Yeah.
It's definitely the most feedback that I've seen from any of our episodes yet.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's pretty awesome.
I kind of wanted it to be Apocalyptic Equine. That's what I wanted. I wanted that to be the episode that exploded, like, you know, got you guys on that.
I mean, to date, that has the most downloads.
All right, cool.
But in terms of feedback, no, this last episode was the most feedback.
We're like converging. What I've noticed is we are starting to converge in a circular pleb podcast economy with like-minded, I think like-minded shows like you guys, Ungovernable, and the Bugle, and we're sort of starting to lock our minds together. I feel like the signal,
you know,
when waves amplify each other. I feel like that's
so. I,
I, d- yeah.
I love Ungovernable. Those guys are really good. But you mentioned the Bugles, so I think that episode or that podcast is hilarious. You say we're kind of converging. Does that mean that you're a PodConf compliance? Is that your new thing? No.
No.
I don't know which side to take on this thing. Am I compliant or not compliant?
I mean, PodConf can eat shit. But we seem to be boosting
Somebody explain what PodConf is again? Like, I've heard that term a million times.
I'm ignorant to this whole thing. I'm not in on the joke.
PodConf is a beautiful portmanteau. That's the only good thing I'm going to say about it. But the Bugle is right now, I think, one of the greatest comedy and satire things we have in Bitcoin. And so if I'm being serious right now, I actually think we're experiencing something in Bitcoin where NGU and price action seems to be dominating core values. And we're starting to see the potential for the tide to go where a lot of people maybe don't.
It definitely feels like the cultural revolution side is kicking into a much higher gear than it has at any point in Bitcoin's past that I've been part of it.
So they invented this lane to joke, really just kind of shame that idea, but in a funny way.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's
a good
working.
Way. Yeah, it's like it's almost. Do you remember back in 2004, 2005, 2006 when Stephen Colbert? He's cringe as fuck now, but he was really funny when he first had his show.
Before
and he
we
was
knew
like
was a
mocking
pedo.
Fox News. He was mocking the conservative media, and he was kind of embracing in a very obviously he was the dipshit. He was pretending to be this expert, or he was pretending to be the moral authority on political discourse, but he was very obviously mocking it for anybody who was close, embedded enough in the culture and the media culture of the time could tell he's mocking O'Reilly and Hannity and those guys. That's what it kind of feels like to me.
Yeah. Oh my God. So you guys remember the last time we did this a month ago? Ago, 94. Anyway, I talked about Phish and how they invented a cover band to pretend to cover. That's what PodConf is. PodConf is an invented entity that approves and sponsors all the podcasters and the conferences that support NGU and compliance.
Okay. All right. Got it.
That makes sense now. That makes it all it's like the rug. It pulls the room together, as Lebowski would say.
It took the Phish fan to understand this. Right?
That was a good explanation of that.
I remember when I found stumbled across the Bugle on Twitter, it was a year and a half ago, and I just immediately DM'd the account, and I'm like, whoever you are, whoever your people are, come on High Hash Rate. Well, we want to do an interview. And the guy's like, whoa, I didn't expect to get go on a podcast or whatever this quick. I got to figure out how to set this up and how I'm going to do this. I'm like, all right, we'll do it. We'll do it next Wednesday. Can you do it late? And he's like, yeah, I can do it. And he comes on. And it was so awkward because I had no idea how to interact with this dude. And he just keeps talking about cigarette money and Dennis Porter. And I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to try to go with it. But I think it turned out pretty good.
Dennis Porter or did he call him Penis Daughter?
Yeah, I think we were calling him Penis Daughter by the end of the episode.
Can I just mention an interesting moment during that whole process is that when he came on, there was a time in which he was pre, Richard Greaser. There was a question in his mind: am I going to do it now, or am I going to?
But he was always in.
Do I have a regular podcast with these guys?
Yeah, he was always in the voice thing.
He asked the question inside of the podcast, I want to try something. And we were of course, try something. And so the whole entire energy of the podcast changed in that moment.
Yeah, it was funny.
Sacha Baron Cohen discover Borat right there.
Yeah, right.
Because now he can stay in character forever. Tell the same exact joke over and over and over again. It never gets old. And it's so relevant. And I feel like I sound like a douchebag by respecting it so much. But as a comedian.
It's an art form.
It's like, I am so in awe of what, there really hasn't been any, I don't think, real, certainly not a comedian, let alone artist, that's captured Bitcoin this well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because it's needed. It's like so fucking needed.
It's like the onion before the onion sucked, and then the Babylon Bee now. Like, it's some of the stuff's hit or miss, but when it hits, man, it hits.
Okay.
So sorry, Business Cat. I have to tell Jose. I have to tell Business Cat. Like, I've been on behalf of Rock Paper Bitcoin. I have been anti-PodConf and uncompliant.
All right. Yeah. And it's. Even though, if you know anything about me and where I work and what I do, I am too. I agree with a cognitive dissonance. It definitely causes that.
Yeah. Genius.
Can I just say? I just want to say I have a doozy of questions, like a bunch of them. So, if you guys like Dan, it sounds like you want to go into something. So I should just I'll back off for a sec.
Yeah, I'll launch us into the deep void, and then you can pick up from there with your questions.
Sounds good.
I don't think anything will throw us off course. After, you know, it's like, let's get to the end of the world. It feels like it is nearing. I mean, it is nearing.
That's where we're going.
Every second we get closer to the end of the world, but it feels like it's happening like very quickly. Maybe this year, maybe before November, certainly potentially right after the election. Half the country's going to fucking riot and burn the whole thing down, regardless of which side wins, because nobody's going to accept it. But that's just the United States. The rest of the stuff, everything else is spiraling. But you guys are hopeful. Why are you hopeful? I'm losing faith.
Can I just say one thing about Richard Griesser and this, because he exists. And because this thing exists, I am like less triggered by all the shit. Because I know that somebody really competent is making it funny. And
that's true. We need
that. I know there are people that are working on this. And that's why
mainstream doesn't have that.
That's why I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because we have a lot of Bitcoiners too that are really good.
He's an excellent indication that the pendulum is swinging back the other direction. Like, I'm sure there's people out there that still think that the train is barreling in one direction. And I mean, certainly the train is off the tracks. There is no happy end for the story that we're on. But politically speaking, but in the meantime, I mean, like, the national dialogue, the comedy, the things I hear at coffee shops, it's like the tide has shifted for sure. Like, young people that were previously, like, people that I know personally in my life that were very left, let's just call them left-leaning, they are en masse reevaluating choices they've made and pre-assumptions about Donald Trump specifically. We just went to a wedding recently, and it was incredible listening to young people talking about politics like I've never heard before. It's unreal. It's like, yeah.
So even if Trump wins and it's like saves America, like we got the fucking solar storms coming. We got the polars or the shifts, the poles, they're shifting. This sounds not bullish.
I mean, changing the color hat on the captain of the Titanic as the Titanic sinks is not necessarily a super... It's not going to save the ship, but I mean, in terms of the culture is important. Like the
I get what you're saying.
All of us. I mean, so I mean, if you want to, you're right. The when you zoom out to the level of the pole shifts and the tsunamis and that kind of stuff, I mean, things get pretty dark pretty quickly. But it's something that I want everybody to keep in mind. Like as you're going down this rabbit hole and you get to the place of nihilism, every single one of us is a descendant of a survivor. Like that's what we do. Our species survives, and we will survive. We will survive this one. This has happened many times before, and it will happen again. We are going to get through this. So, like, whether it is like you're talking about this 4-year political cycle, like this stupid North American political cycle that the rest of the world has to suffer through also, or you're talking about the catastrophe of like the world turning over. Like, we're going to get through this. Like, it's going to be okay.
Maybe as a species. Yes.
Yes. individual. Yeah. It's... sometimes they like, I mean, like, it's like the idea of decision, like we've lived in such a fiat world of decisions not mattering, of like you live your entire lifetime making decisions and then it's okay because the medical system can just bail you out of it, or I mean you're close to the money printer so they can just literally bail you out of it with money. We are approaching a point in geologically speaking, civilizationally speaking, that the tide is going out, and we are finding out rapidly who has a suit on. And like when the tide comes back in, I mean, unless you get the hell out of the way of the tide, it doesn't matter. Like, we can all point around, like, wow, this is fascinating. Look, I saw it before the other people. We're figuring it out. But like, unless you take action on the data that you're being fed, I mean, it's ultimately all of our fates are in our own hands. And like, there's like we have survived this before. How would we survive it this time? Well, we can see some predictable things happening, and we can take action. Like, you get to a higher elevation point than you are now. Like, there's ways that you can raise your. I was just having this conversation today. I need to sit down and like actually run my numbers on like what do I like my bullish case and pessimistic case, my bullish and bearish case for like the population of just North America after this. And really wherever I go, like I haven't figured out the numbers yet, but wherever I go with it mentally, Bitcoiners are going to be enormously represented in the population that survives and moves on. Like, that's what's happening right now, is Bitcoin is pre-selecting for the people that are going to be adaptable enough to survive this. So yeah, like it's scary. The world's a scary place. But yeah, guess what? We're adults. We're men. Buckle up. Put your fucking big boy pants on and let's handle it. Let's fucking work the problem and move forward.
That's inspiring. And you talk about like getting to higher ground when the wave is coming. It's like a metaphor. What does that mean? Like what are we doing to prepare? Because I kind of agree, but I just don't know, like, where do we go next? It seems like everybody's retreating. Everybody's talking about pulling out of the United States. People are talking about closing their app, shutting down their CoinJoin mixer, or getting it shut down, being sued, talking about Monero. Youth, like, maybe there's other choices. Maybe we should do Fediments. Maybe we should do this. We need privacy. Everybody seems like they're in a retreat and not pushing forward. What is your perspective on that? Does anybody have a perspective on that?
I would say we are a society of weak men. And I think I like what Business Cat just said. It's like we've been unaccountable because of fiat money. We have been unaccountable, right? Because
we've been writing checks that our ass keeps being able
over,
to cash.
Yeah, and it can happen when you don't have this type of system. And what Bitcoin is coming to do is to bring accountability, and it's going to select, like, basically the people that understand that shit are going to make it. I don't know, like, I'm not entirely, like, I don't know what the conclusion is in terms of where to live and all of that stuff. I just know that accountability is coming, and the sooner we all put ourselves, you know, something that I think about a lot is I used to be one of these woke people, right? And I, you know, talked about like, oh, the tide has turned. Yeah. I mean, like, I was like super woke and like.
When was this? Like, what was the time period that you were woke, and when did you?
It was, I would say, really from 2000 to 2020, that 20
oh, wow.
year period.
You were a Bernie bro.
No, I hated, no. no.
He wasn't woke enough. Bro.
I was about like really just being like an ally to black people. Like that was like.
I love to be friends with black people, dude.
That was a 20-year project. Yeah. Built my whole, but the reason I say this.
Did you ever get an N-word pass?
No.
Hell damn, no. Dude. See, you.
I didn't. I mean, I would have never asked for one. I knew better than that.
Sure, sure.
Okay, but like, the reason I brought that up is one of the things I read that I guess really pushed me into the direction I'm in now was in Hoppe's book, Democracy: The God That Failed. There's a whole chapter on why, like, it's important to be able to discriminate. And I remember reading it, thinking, man, this is fucked. Like, how far is Austrian economics really asking me to go, right? To consider what it has to say. And, you know, I actually got myself to the point where I really fully agree. And the reason why, it's important in a world where you can be held accountable for being, you get rewarded if you're a good discriminator and you get wrecked if you're a bad one. And fiat doesn't allow that accountability to happen. And so that's why it's become like, well, you just can't do it. And, you know, nobody gets held accountable. You know, the markets should hold you accountable. You know, like this, the Jim Crow South got held accountable. They were poor as fuck for a long time. And they're like, fuck that. That's fine. This is what we're going to do. And, you know, in a world where we're accountable, and that's what Bitcoin is bringing. Right, it's going to bring back accountability, and those who thrive in that world will be ready. I believe, at least, that will be the pool from which the survivors of this event will be selected from.
Yeah, I mean, there's a group of people out there who are going to be like the fiat people, the people who do get like they do figure out the pole shift and get freaked out by that, but they don't figure out Bitcoin. It's like I feel. Boy, do I feel for those people.
Oh my God. And
I can't imagine the amount of terror they must go through to, yeah. But like.
Well, in that way, it is hope. Absolutely.
It's like the people that fight freedom fights without Bitcoin, and they like ruin their lives because they're fighting like the hardest thing. It's like trying to stop a car with your hands. Like.
Yeah. Imagine being like part of the cabal that like runs the deep state. Like, so you've spent 50 years, 60 years getting ready for this. Like, I mean, they've known about this since the late 40s was when they figured this out. It's like, they've been getting ready. They've been debasing all of our money. They've been digging their freaking deep underground tunnels and hollowing out Cheyenne Mountain and Raven Rock, all of this massive network of them, the elites, getting ready for this while they leave us behind. Enter Bitcoin, like in the ninth inning, like it's the bottom of the ninth. Bitcoin steps in. All of a sudden, all these fucks aren't going to be able to pay their power bills. They're not going to be able to pay the bills of the people carrying their rifles. It's gonna the Bitcoin is the thing that makes the meek inherit the earth. So like, preparing for this without Bitcoin, like don't think that you can get ready for what's coming with the geomagnetic pole shift without accepting Bitcoin, like in the meantime, because Bitcoin is going to turn the world upside down financially before it happens, literally, like we get from the geomagnetic excursion. Like, it's amazing.
Wow. Why,
like, this is what religious texts have talked about. Like,
I got a question for Business Cat. What if there is a amount of hash rate that actually reverses this process? We have no idea. We've never observed it.
Go, wait. Break that down for a second.
Expand on that.
What if the electromagnetic field of, say, you know, whatever 50 times 600 exahash is, what is, I can't think of that in units, 30 zeta hash or something like that. I don't know what the unit is. What if it gets to a high enough level that it actually mitigates this event?
No, there's nothing that humans can do to generate an EM field powerful enough to replace the planet's EM field. But what we potentially could do, if we can get like what you want to talk cosmic, like what we could do by getting, maybe there is some some hash ceiling out there, like cosmic hash ceiling, that we burst through it. And that puts us on the radar of some galactic intelligence. It's like, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. These humans, they're hashing at rates we did not predict. We need to step in and save them from what's about to happen. Like, maybe that might happen. I don't think we're going to turn on so many miners.
I got to deflect cosmic particles. That's the more logical thing, right? Where it's like these aliens are actually waiting for us to prove to them that we're not going to all murder each other.
This is the perfect segue. Because before we get into the aliens a little more deeply, explain my theory before we jump into the aliens.
Please do.
My question to you guys, to think about while I'm talking, is how do you define alien? What does alien mean? And so the reason I ask is because you talk about this, is there's a certain amount of hash rate or is a certain amount of whatever that sparks this change or mitigates this event or signals to the aliens that we're ready or something, right? But if you think about the time chain itself, you know, we talk about how is it secure and it's the amount of hash rate, the amount of energy going into getting the next block, and the difficulty keeps rising. So as every block is added, it gets more and more difficult to rewrite the chain. But theoretically, with enough energy, and control of the network, at least 51%, you could go back and rewrite the chain. Or you could at least, I mean, that would take a lot of energy, but if you had enough, theoretically, it'd be possible. Be more practical that you could go back and change a few blocks. You could change a few things in the past, quote unquote, and that would affect the future. So what if that is just kind of like this this catalyst of that triggers people's thinking that if we can harness enough energy, we could rewrite the wrongs that we've made. Maybe not go back in time the way you're thinking of in a movie, right? Where you go back and everybody's listening to the music in the 90s and listening to fucking, you know, Nirvana and Kurt Cobain's still alive. But you could impact something that happened in the past and fix it, prevent the calamity that you're facing today. And then that leads me back to what I asked before, like, what is an alien? Like, regardless of what your definition is, it's something that is just different from the humans, the people that we are, the way we think, the way we consider ourselves having like souls, like separate from our bodies. It's just something that you can't really identify with, almost like a person who might have been on this earth 40,000 years ago, regardless of if they were to be categorized scientifically as a human. If we were to meet each other, it would almost be like they are an alien. And what if the aliens are the next life form that we're leveling up to, that after generations of their existence, they would look back at who we are. We were talking on, you know, podcasting, we're all over the country in different times, different parts of space, but we're still able to communicate. Like, we have all this technology, we seem pretty advanced, but they would be so far advanced that it would be like an alien life form.
I think in this context, I would look at an alien as somebody with superior intelligence who, like, isn't fazed for themselves by the things that we think are a hopeless struggle because of their ability. And, you know, I know it's a popular theory that Satoshi was an alien who came back in time and implemented something superior.
I was just going to say, like any of the core devs, honestly.
And so we may already be on that arc, right? Like, we may already be on this arc of, you know, hey, like the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure arc, where they had to go back in time and, who knows, save the world here, right?
In a phone booth, right?
But it's about, like, in a phone booth. But in the case of Bitcoin, right? I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. But in the case of Bitcoin, it's about demonstrating the ability to cooperate. That's the thing that I think we couldn't do until Bitcoin was around long enough to show us that we could do that. It's the ability to cooperate and not fucking kill each other.
Okay, we kind of talked about this before on the show a million times, honestly, but it's, this is, you know, we talk about how difficult it is to really to even have like a country like the United States where it's every, the people who just the demographics of Los Angeles are so different than the demographics of Oklahoma, of Nebraska. It's different than New York City. It's different than South Florida. And it's difficult enough to have a country or a state or a society that's got, it's so diverse. And you see the problems with diverse cultures clashing really badly in Europe, and it's pretty much all over the world. But then you come to this, you find this space, and it's like almost the opposite. It's like people from different cultures and different parts of the world, they're coming together, they're doing business together, they're investing, they're going to, you know, conferences, they're opening up conferences in Africa. Like, people are traveling all over, meeting, collaborating, incentives are aligned. And it's just like there, it's almost like an operating system upgrade that just changes, you know, to effect for like, all right, we've got these external systems. How do we align them? It's like Peter McCormick had him on his show. He was some guy from Scotland. He sounded like Alan Farrington, but he wasn't Alan Farrington. And he was a systems engineer. And it's like when you have like all of these different microsystems kind of working together to form a single like monolith. It's the way that it operates all together is not how everything necessarily operates individually. You have to account for that.
With the way you just described it, like, I think that pivots well into my answer of what is an alien. I've been sitting here like racking my brain trying to define an alien, but I keep like, it's so easy to
somebody
define
from
yourself
Mexico,
right? Somebody from Mexico. So. I think what I'm solidifying on it, what is an alien, is an alien is a conscience that is working against the group consensus. So like Bitcoiners, when you become a Bitcoiner, you're an alien. When somebody comes here like illegally and breaks the law and comes here illegally, like, you're an alien. Like, whenever you jump through all the hoops that the society puts in front of you to make you a citizen, you're not an alien anymore. But so, like, thinking about, like, an alien in terms of, like, space aliens, so an alien is an extra, like, that's an intelligence that is looking at the human species the way we look at ants. Like, I mean, it's potentially willing to do things to us that we wouldn't be willing to do to ourselves. Like, take you neuter a cat, no cat's willingly going to neuter itself. Like I think that's where I'm at for the what's an alien.
Not even a business cat.
Good fucking line, man. Good line.
You know, what's amazing about what you just said, though, like, it's kind of true. Like, when you become a Bitcoiner, like, you don't even notice the lower life forms anymore.
Like, as soon as you become a Bitcoiner, like, you become a space alien walking among the humans.
That's not just Bitcoin. Once you become, you have money, you see poor people, and you're like, they're subhuman.
For sure.
I'm just kidding.
No, but it's more like the Borg, like, you know, when the Enterprise, when they went on the Borg ship and they noticed them, but they walked right by them.
Yeah.
They didn't
you're
see them as threats at all. They just,
right. That's so business that, as that usual. Gets me to the, like, I'm not the first person to say this. I think I've heard it a million other places, but like, what if there's an alien life form that's just so advanced that not only do we not recognize even that it's a being, it's like they don't even recognize us as being a worthy species or, you know, life form to interact with. Like, it's almost like we're bacteria to them, and they just spray us with a antibacterial, like an anti-human thing that just sucks our oxygen out, right? Like, they don't care. Like, they don't even recognize, like, that we're something to communicate with or to study.
So my answer to that would be, again, it comes down to the ability to cooperate, to show we can cooperate, and then the ability to show value. So I think that people who can generate power costlessly on this earth will probably be of value to even a superior life form like that.
Take that.
So that's like the Rick and Morty episode even Jerry's have value. Like having a worshiper that will follow you and do anything you say without question. Like, that's a valuable thing. And so
We well, control yeah. the resources. We were like, you know, when we control sort of like the honest resources on the planet, this like we do, we are the indigenous here, and we probably are at least the smarter ones who can cooperate. Would you think would be of use to, you know, the superior life form
in some way.
If there is some superior life form that could do those things you're describing, like I would say, what do we need to? We need to stay out of their way. Don't piss them off. Don't do anything that would aggravate them.
No, we need to communicate to them. Find a way to communicate to them in a way that they would understand. Value for value.
Find out what this civilization values and figure out how we can add value to it. In the meantime, let's not point any laser pointers at them or anything that they might.
I think by definition, you can't really know what an alien is. I mean, that's the whole point.
Until you see it, I guess.
That's right.
Well, no, you'll never see it. That's what I'm saying. Because
there's a headline on CNN or Twitter that says that there's aliens or UFOs, it's like nobody's going to take that seriously because you're not going to find out if aliens are real from Twitter. You're not going to find out if aliens are real from looking on your screen of any screen, computer screen, phone screen, TV screen. You're going to, you know, it's like Independence Day when he walks outside, he's reading the newspaper and he looks up and there's this giant ship that's like hovering over this city of Los Angeles. It's going to be or you're going to be getting probed up your ass by the aliens, but you're not going to find out
digitally. A flight when a guy blinks his second eyelids at you.
And if you find out from a screen, it's because your screen's going to go black because everything is going to be, there's going to be no energy or it's going to be some kind of like electromagnetic field that wipes all your hard drives.
Right. You find out by waking up on an alien surgical table.
These are extreme versions, but maybe this is a good time to discuss my Dennis Rodman theory quickly.
Ooh, thank you for bringing it
back. Because I don't know how you guys know who he was. He was a professional basketball player. Also, probably known as the weirdest motherfucker, like that.
He was the first trans NBA player.
I mean, it's weird, right? Really fucked up and weird. But here's the thing: what people may not know about him, basketball fans know this, but his nickname was the Worm because apparently, when he was in college, in 1 year he grew 9 inches.
So height or in his pants?
In height.
Oh, okay.
In height. I doubt it scaled.
Growing out of shore. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, yeah. So supposedly he grew, this is the story, and everyone just accepted the story, right? So they accepted the story that we have this guy who's really fucking weird and doesn't look like he belongs here and has a backstory that, he just grew 8 inches in a year. I mean, I think it's a really good chance that he was replaced or just put here,
right? I was gonna say, like, I think clones are real. I think that people have been replaced in the past, public personas. It's possible. Yeah, it's possible aliens did it, or it's possible the CIA did it.
Why,
like, even like Quantum Leap was about, like, the show Quantum Leap, they would abduct the person and replace him with the main character,
right.
He would live their life,
right?
That's the thing. What got me thinking about
this. How devastating that we would all find out they were just clones, talking to each other.
I mean, we are just clones. Real. I mean, we are in a certain sense right?
Whatever it is that each of us discover on our journey, like if it is that you're a clone, like this is our journey. So, like, I mean, it is what it is. Like, you can, it's like Buddha teaches, like, you can either accept it and walk your path, or you can beat your head against the wall for all eternity. It's like, okay, so what? We're clones. And there's a pole shift to prepare for. Like, fuck clone. Like, I don't give a shit about that. Like, I have a wife, I have a family. Let's work on the problem.
Yeah, and by the way, Business Cat and I went deep on Star Wars a couple weeks ago. There is a story arc around the clones that does individualize them, and is kind of cool. And that's us. We really are. We come from an alien would look at us as clones, without a doubt. Same way we look at ants, right?
No, yeah, that's the unfortunate thing about it. I mean, the talking about an extrasolar intelligence that is not looking at our species the same way we look at ourselves. Like, what are we here? Maybe we're a crop. Maybe they're farming us. Well, we just don't know it.
That's already true of people. I mean, like, we see our cultures see humans and human value and the way, and like different religions and different parts of the world, they see human life, they value it in a totally different way. I mean, you've got some people who think that they don't necessarily say it explicitly, but like they're the Malthusian anti-energy. It's basically saying we need to depopulate, and it sounds like a conspiracy, but it's really just the logical conclusion of their policies and everything they stand for. And you have some people who, you know, some of these people have these beliefs at the same time, that we are like built in the image of a God, or built in the image of God. We're the sun, you know, or we're the creation of some higher being. We have this special status above the animals and the rest of the life forms. But I mean, that is as dire of a chasm to get across, to cooperate with another person based on their completely separate way of valuing human life, that it's like the aliens aren't even the problem. We have to be able to cooperate with our neighbors. Like, you got people saying that they love somebody that lives in Palestine and they don't even know their neighbor's name, and they haven't called their dad in 2 months, 2 years. Like, how are we going to cross this divide of like working just together with our own fellow people in the same like generation, like fellow millennials that hate each other and will, you know, go to war to kill each other? We haven't gotten past that. I don't know if we haven't gotten past that, we're ready for the aliens.
I do think it's starting, because it starts with money that can't be cloned. And that's the tide that has to turn. And the people, honestly, like people that get that are much more open to understanding people, right? This is why I mentioned that I was like a woke head up my ass for years. Once I started to get Bitcoin, oh my God, like I'm like open to discriminate. I'm open to all of it. And
I'm open to discrimination, you know, for sure.
It's not even that. And I was excited to go to the middle of Pennsylvania every month for meetups. Like, I was excited now to meet these people, like, that they were not in my echo chamber.
These were like the Trump country, the people that you probably hated a couple of years ago.
It's like being born again.
Yes.
Starting a new life.
That's how I met Business Cat and a lot of other people. And this is the thing that turns the tide.
Yeah. Do you think that there's some, I don't know if it's like value or like skill, but to having held or been able to follow such extreme polar opposite ideologies and take them to like such a serious level, and then to come back, to step back and to do that from a different angle, or maybe you'll do it again. Maybe you'll step back from whatever ideological like alignment you have right now, and you'll move towards another one, and you'll just like really embrace it and kind of see things from that perspective. Do you think you think that gives you any extra insight? Like, you kind of can tell what the other side is thinking about any given issue, because you're like, well, I know how I think about that immediately.
Yeah, I do. I think Business Cat and I talked about this once on a podcast. It was like, how much time should we spend understanding our enemies and like that? And
that's a good question.
Probably a little bit, and it probably helps a little bit. But the reality is, like, you don't want these people. Like, you're the average of the five people you're closest to, and you just don't want any of these people in that circle,
sure,
even in your mind.
Sure. Right. Yeah. You don't. That rubs off on you. There's no way to. It's like physics, right? Like, the more perspectives that you're exposed to, it's just you're going to naturally tend to mimic some of that. To blend in. It's a survival instinct, honestly.
Until we have the Matrix technology where we can just dump information into somebody's brain, lived experience is the best we have. I mean, we can tell each other, we can try to give each other advice, but I mean, it works sometimes, but I mean, reliably, people learn from experience. So, I mean, I look back at the path I've walked, and yeah, I can definitely, when I see angry college students that are angry about nonsense happening else, they're angry because they received some marching order from like some high level Democrat. They don't see it that way, but like that's what's happening. Like you don't have an internal value structure, so you're importing your orders from somewhere else. And like I get that because I was like you weren't a Bernie bro. You hated Bernie bros. I was a Bernie bro. Like whenever I got out of the Air Force and was just starting to get my like starting to pay attention to politics, it's like I'm at college. Boy, you know what? I deserve free shit, and Bernie's promising me free shit, and he said he's nice. Oh boy, but aren't Democrats nice? Aren't like those mean Republicans? I was figuring shit out. The mantra is like no young person, like no leftist was like when you're young,
if you're young,
left because
if you're a Democrat, if you're not a liberal when you're young, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative when you're middle aged, you have no brain.
Yeah, and I mean that speaks exactly to the path that I walked. Like I was young and I wasn't thinking, I was feeling. And I felt very strongly. And then Bitcoin entered my life and forced me to think objectively about things. And I started thinking. And as I started thinking, I started questioning all of these other beliefs and values that I hadn't questioned before. And I realized, okay, I'm right about Bitcoin. The world is wrong. For me to be able to live my life based on that, I need to internalize a value structure that I can live by. And like, I can't look to anybody else because nobody else out that I can see has this and is saying it's like, I need to come up with my own value structure and Bitcoin's right. The world's wrong. I'm going forward. And so I didn't realize at the time, but downstream of that, I now have an internal set of values. I now could not be buffeted nearly as easily from the winds of propaganda and like people outside of me who would try to use me for their means, because like I was marching on my own orders now, like I'm going somewhere, it's Bitcoin. And once like I would like that freed my mind from all of the mental shackles that put me in a position to like run into things and put me like on the path I am now. So yeah, like when you're young, you have like young people think with their hearts because that's all the experience they have. They've been feeling emotion since he's hit puberty. And man, I was like, that's all you have. Like, that's all you have. That's all you're going to work on.
Does that give you, I feel like that would give you empathy then for like the other side. It's like that there is a chance, there's hope that they can also find a firm, you know, foundation to start building an identity that they can live by, that isn't about I have to follow these rules because this is my in-group. It's almost like a diet. It's like, yeah, there's the perfect, you know, whatever that perfect diet is, but it's really, you got to start with what you can follow, like what you can actually follow, what is true to like your instinct, how you think. Because if you're trying to live an ideology that isn't like true to your lived experience, true to your background, your culture, your values, you can't stick to it. You'll constantly be a hypocrite. You'll constantly fuck up and fail because it's to live a certain way. Like you have to trust your gut. Like you have to build this, this framework for yourself and follow it. But you can't just take from this group who they've got mantras and chants and signs and slogans. You can't just try to live off of that. And that's what a lot of young people, they just don't have that yet. So they're following like this in-group.
You have to do the work too.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing. And as somebody who's
went
from one extreme to the other, I mean, I was doing the work. I read a lot of woke shit, a lot of literature.
Do you feel bad for them now?
As hard as I went at Bitcoin, as hard as I went in the rabbit hole of Bitcoin, that's how hard I read. I mean, that's how hard I was reading their literature. The thing I'll say about having flipped, right? I don't think it's an advantage for me so much, except what I will say is like I have a daughter in college. And she's at least observed, you know, me almost her entire life, raising her inside of this very, very, you know, kind of strict social blueness.
Literally.
Not that I was like not a Democrat and I wasn't political. I cared about the one thing I cared about, which was the racial justice. But she was raised in that and then watched me flip and, you know, like, she's good. Like, she's
I think that's
not...
one of the most important things that a kid can see a parent do is say, I was wrong about this.
Did she ask you about it? Is she inquisitive about it?
I mean, both of my kids have asked me a lot about it. Like, how did you, do you worry that you're wrong now? And Oh, and I never worry that I'm wrong. I do, because that's what I do, the work, but I'm always doing the work.
Like, yeah, I'm always looking to be falsified.
Yes, right? I'm always, exactly. Like, I'm always trying to validate my worldview, right? Because I know I can be wrong, but I never think I am.
Yeah, you asked, do I feel bad for people that are like further behind the path? It's like, I feel like I figured this out pretty late in life. It's like, I guess when I was in the Air Force, I was just fucking off and not developing, because it took like leaving the Air Force and getting out in the real world for me to start paying attention to, like, so I figured I started walking the path. I feel late, but I mean, there's still, you know, like, it's like your story fundamentals of like, you figured out your problem, and I didn't have to go through like changing like flag, taking one flag out of my backpack and putting another flag in my backpack. Or actually, I guess taking the flags out and then taking the backpack off and then having to turn and face your family and be like, oh, so I've been carrying these flags. It's like, I was just kind of between people. Like, my parents knew me, my brother is on the other side of the planet. I don't have a big family. So like, and I was just dating my now wife at the time. So I didn't have a lot of people to be accountable in my life. My worldview has completely changed. So like, I know I don't have a lot of sympathy people. I mean, it's like, you have to, like, everybody has capability to wake up and not be an NPC anymore. It's like, of course, everybody is, like, everybody's capable of salvation, everybody, but there's a certain, it's like, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's like, you have to want to make a change. Like, if you don't want to make a change, you're going to be an NPC for the rest of your life. So I feel bad for people that are clearly suffering and in pain, but I mean, I'm not, that's their decision. That's their path, their destiny. I mean, their karmic wheel that they're walking.
I mean, there used to be a value to be strong. And I don't see that, right? I never really saw that in my peer group. I feel like I was the only one that listened to my dad and like wanted to do the hard things. And I see it like my kids' friends who, you know, the one, you can just see that their parents are kind of weak.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I've been thinking about this too. So it sounds like you're Generation X and the rest of us are millennials. So you're the right person to kind of talk to this about, because you kind of see millennials from like a different perspective. But there's kind of this this theme, right? And we've mentioned it here multiple times, right? Like, it's not a value to be strong, or it's undervalued, and it's, nobody wants to do the hard thing. Nobody wants to take the hard medicine, do the difficult shit. Nobody wants to be accountable, and it's down to the core of the generation of the millennial, like what we're known for, right? The safe space generation, the participation trophy generation. We are who we are, you know, not us necessarily, but our generation, our cohorts. We are who we are because of the people who raised us, because of the culture we were in, because of fiat, because we didn't have to be strong, because there was always a pill that would make it better. We always had the military. We never had to deal with any wars or anything like that on our soil. It was always far away. And it's being abstracted every day. Like, there's less and less soldiers or military personnel. Your life is far less in danger for any of the conflicts that we're getting involved in. But this is eventually going to run out. This is eventually going to run dry. And it's almost like our hero's journey as like this generation of millennials. If you read the fourth turning, we are supposed to be the hero generation, the GI generation that won World War II. It's very difficult for me to see the millennial generation right now being the next hero generation. So I, you know, that's what makes me wonder, like, how is this whole thing going to play out? Because this cycle that we're in, this cultural cycle, this generational cycle is, if it's got 10 years, maybe, you know, maybe 20 years tops, but I feel like it's got less than that. And what is this upheaval going to be? What's the other side going to look like? I don't think the world's going to end, you know, from a literal standpoint. But the world we live in, the world we know today, the world that we grew up in, is likely going to end. And I'm wondering when we decide that it's time to take the pill and just suffer. Maybe we spend the rest of our lives suffering just to make it by, just so that the world can keep going.
Suffering. That's all this is.
It's avoidance. Like everybody's on Adderall. Everybody's on antidepressants. Nobody wants to deal with the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I think when it comes to like Bitcoiners, I think the millennials are like, I love them. They're very hopeful. They're very easy to talk to. And like a lot of the lessons that took me a really, really, really long time to learn in life, they seem to get like pretty quickly. So like, I kind of love teaming up with, that's why I love you guys, honestly. Like I can't get enough of building and hanging out with you guys, because it's just very easy. I feel like we are like-minded. And I think that Gen X also has an important role. We have a lot more life experience and maybe more savings, and that makes us less of a sellout, more able to resist. And I think like something we talked about, like my parents and my parents' generation, like they were once fucking based as shit. They were savers. They were like tight as shit when it came to the money, right? They lived like money was scarce. And some point along the line, that just went out.
Because at some point in their life, money was scarce.
Yes. That's right. They're like the last people that kind of remember that.
Talk about people the Great Depression. They're so frugal because they had to eat cabbage soup, or if they had got any food at all. It's like that is the reality for most of human beings, for most of human existence, is to be very, very grateful just to have a meal that day. And now it's like you see everybody's fat, everybody's just weak, seed oils full of sugar, carbs. Like it's overloaded. It's gone the other direction. And to tie it back to what we started with, even with the Bugle, it made me think of this. They talk about this compliance, NGU, and it's like we're latching on to this. If we just keep doing what we've been doing and we don't upset the elites, we don't upset the order, we don't upset Mother Nature, whatever it is, we'll still get to NGU. We won't have to work hard. We won't have to suffer. We won't have to make hard decisions. We won't have to resist. We won't have to do anything. We just comply and we'll get NGU. And it's, I think that hopefully people are waking up to that's not the way. I don't know.
I really don't know, dude. Like I get sentiment from like Bitcoiners that I know that have been around a while that like, you know, we really need to clean the space up so that the big money can come in and feel good about it. And
right, like that's
this is just why I think that the work of Richard Griesser is so important, is because
his compliance work.
I do think that's a strong sentiment, right? Is that we don't need censorship resistance as much as we need NGO.
Okay, that's...
I mean, we were talking tonight, I had my meetup tonight, and we had a RoboSat demo. One of my members did, my members, sound like a fucking Amway group. But one of the people that comes to my meetup was gracious and did a RoboSat demo, and it was great. We were like really talking a lot about why is KYC free Bitcoin important? And somebody immediately brought up, like, what if I want to donate to the Samurai's Legal Fund? I'm genuinely worried that the government will reprise on me if I'm known to do that. And it's like, it's super important. And I feel like we've lost the value. And it's almost like a lot of people, I feel like, are willing to sell it out for this idea of NGU, which is not even a fucking thing, in my opinion. Not necessarily.
It's a psyop. It's a psyop.
It's not a mathematical property of Bitcoin in any way.
It's just it's a perspective that it's a perspective based on looking at the dollar. But you can point the perspective of sats to anything else. and it's different, but it's like everybody's so focused on dollar exchange rate, right? And it's like that is not a great indicator of anything because that is so manipulated that it could be whatever they want it to be.
Yeah, and the idea that we need, let's just say institutions that don't already understand why Bitcoin is important for them, that we need to like, you know, make it look better.
Like we need to hold the hands of the billionaires and be like, this is why you need the best money ever that we have. It's like they're trying to convince themselves. They're not trying to convince the billionaires.
The sipping is out of control. And I mean, I don't know if it's just some people, maybe a lot of people don't, you know, there's people that that saved a lot of money and want to preserve it. And then there's people that want Bitcoin to make them rich. And I do think those are two different.
I mean, types everybody of gets into Bitcoin for number go up. As I mean, like Andrew Tate is tweeting today that he's going to ape into Bitcoin because he wants to leave the banks behind. It's like, okay.
I don't think that's true, though. I mean, I can honestly say that is not how I did not even know. Like, when I got into Bitcoin, I didn't even know there was a supply cap. I got into Bitcoin because I was worried about maybe needing to flee the country, and I would likely need a way outside of the normal currency system to be able to do that. And I had no idea it had the economic properties that it had.
I would say NGU catches people's eye, though. That's how it gets in the news. That's how you hear about it. Whether everybody gets into it or not, because it's such a popular saying, let's just assume for a moment that it is. The problem with that is, as we all know, that it doesn't always go up. There is a lot of times of crash and down, and not everybody has the same, you know, time preferences. Not everybody has the same, you know, is on the same schedule. So it's number go up. If you only come for number go up, you'll leave when number goes down. It's got to be more than that.
Which is fine. Like, go. Like, that's, yeah, you know, that. Right, that's but a normal,
yeah, my point is, like, people aren't going to stay.
Right? But then to come in and say, you know, we need number go up. What can we do to make number go up happen? Oh, let's give up censorship resistance and, you know, permissionlessness to make the space more attractive for a bunch of shitheads who don't understand why they want to be here at all.
Well, I mean, we all need to, it comes down to the same thing. They need our Bitcoin. It's the same thing as the GameStop shares, the shorts going on right now. Like all those GameStop memers have to do is not sell. Like, I mean, that short position, it like has to close eventually. It's like they need the shares. And if they don't, if the people that actually hold them don't sell, then that's going to drive a predictable result. And the same thing is applying here in Bitcoin. Like, we have nations entering the space now. I mean, they are fighting us. They've been fighting us like underhandedly, dirtily under the table. Now they're fighting us nakedly with assault weapons, like over the table. So like, but what can any one of us do? Like not much. Like we can say the right things at the right times, but ultimately what can we do is like, you just hold your Bitcoin and wait. I mean, like, we're going to win. There's a predictable outcome here.
We can do a lot, though, because what the four of us do is we have conversations that give people hope to fight. And I think that actually is that is what I was trying to articulate in the beginning of what I'm feeling around the podcast and like the fact that, you know, it's starting, you know, whatever, it ended up on some ranking or something like that. But what I'm feeling is that people are actually listening to us and feeling hopeful about all this shit.
The tide has turned, for sure.
I mean, sir, it gives me hope when you talk about it the way you do.
For sure. And talking about it gives me hope. Yeah.
I have two things I wanted to get into tonight, but we're already at an hour. So I can preview them, or we can just, you know.
Do we come back and do 103?
Preview them.
Do we come back for 103?
Here's the first question. it was around this topic that we started off with, which is the 103. Why did you want to do 103? That was one of the questions. Okay, that's one. And then the other one was this tweet that interaction that I had with you. And it was, I tweeted this out. The tweet, I think it was, fiat is an unsolvable equation. And then you wrote back to me this sort of actual equation, the sets of equations. And like, I just wanted you to kind of, if you remember that.
I do.
That was the two, those are the two things that I.
The 103 is Jan 3, is January 3rd. And that was, I thought that'd be cool.
Okay.
That's simple. The, I think what you just asked, what ties into everything we just talked about, you said something and I thought it was really deep. When you said Bitcoin is an unsolvable equation, I started to think about, well, how human beings, what do we do when we have unsolvable equations? How do we, what is the history of people trying to solve unsolvable equations? And what I was telling you was that there's like a deep history that one, you know, there was a time where all we had were like positive numbers and we wanted to solve the question of what, how do you, X plus one equals zero. What do? I can't solve it. I have no numbers. So somebody very smart said, let's just invent this thing called negative numbers and we can solve that problem. No worries, right? And then here we are with what we call integers, negative numbers, positive numbers, but they're all whole numbers, right? And then we wanted to sort of say, well, what if I want to say some number times one of these numbers equals, you know, what's a number, you know, equals itself? And they invented fractions, right? They invented like rational, called rational numbers. Then we needed things like square roots and stuff like that. So we invented they invented a new number system called the real numbers. That's like what we call numbers, right? And then we had something called like we had an equation like x squared plus one equals zero. Oh my God, how do I get x squared to equal negative one? We invented something called complex number system to solve that problem, just to solve that problem, right? Not to draw this out, but like the question of how do I deal with a planet that's run by fiat money, right? We had to invent a new system that didn't exist, a new type of number. Bitcoin it's just like inventing a new set of numbers that we didn't have that solved the problem.
Okay.
Or that make it possible. It makes it possible to solve the problem now within that system.
I guess, man, I'm going to keep on going. I guess what I have to ask is like, what's the desire to equal out? Like, what's the...
Well, that's a great question. Well, okay. You know, I was going to mention this about a half hour ago. There's a Bitcoiner named Michael Dunworth. I heard him say something that human beings' highest priority should be to find the largest prime numbers. This is just something that I heard him say. And like, there's a context in which that's true. And yet somehow in the world, we feel like the prime numbers we have are large enough and we just ended up pointing 600 exahash into hashing this one algorithm now. That's what we spend our energy on, not searching for higher prime numbers. Okay. You guys know what prime numbers are, obviously. That's something that you can't, it's irreducible, we'll say. It can't be divided. It can only be divided by itself or one. So it's like irreducible, essentially, right? 7 is a prime number. 8 is not. 8 can be divided 4 times 2, right? In this game of equations, right? It's a tale as old as time. So mathematics has been, since the ancient Greeks, has been trying to solve what's called equations. And you take an equation and you set it equal to zero. So like the first one I said x plus one equals zero. How do I solve that? I need a negative number. I need negative one to solve that. To solve that question, x plus one equals zero. Okay, why does this matter? You get into polynomials and, you know, you can factor them, right? That's like, high school algebra, right? And factor polynomials. And so you might have a polynomial and it says x minus 2 times x minus 3 equals 0. And then you have some that can't be factored. Those are like primes. And that's what cryptography is built on. As it happens, the polynomials are like that are irreducible. This is the rabbit hole that I've been in for a year, Galois fields. But this is what we care about solving. We care about solving basic equations, linear, quadratic, etc. We want to reduce them. We want to be able to. We want to find these zeros. This is something very basic. It enables, like when I say it enables cryptography, that sounds really shallow. But when we say it enables the ability to like really keep a secret and to solve, cryptography is probably the most important thing that we've had for like 100 years, right?
It is a language that we very likely share with whatever space aliens are here right now. And yeah, I will point out that a super, super high, very, very difficult to factor prime number, it could be a way that we prove our intelligence to some extra super intelligent entity. Is like, oh yeah, hey look, we can blink this number that indicate, I don't know how we'd communicate it to him, but here's this prime number that is super complicated that we're aware of. Look how smart we are. Like that's a way that we could prove to a very smart thing very quickly that we're smart.
And if that's true, we're either on the wrong track by putting 600 exahash of the world's resources towards SHA-256. And not putting that towards finding higher prime numbers, or by doing this, we're actually proving to them that we are capable of cooperating with each other and not murdering each other. That's like the way that, to me, that's how you think about that.
Well, gentlemen, shall we wrap it up soon? I want to keep on going, to be honest, but I know
I can go for another 7 hours, guys.
This has been amazing as always. Thanks for having us on again. This is episode 100?
This will 100. Be episode 100.
Beautiful.
I'm going to put like party noises in the background.
We made it to 100.
Big deal. Anyway, congratulations, guys. Congratulations on 100 episodes.
Thank you. 100 episodes. That's significant.
First 100 is about data collection, and the second 100 is about like finding a voice. That's what they say.
Could not be more honored to be part of the 100 episode.
Well, you'll definitely be a bigger part of the next 100 than the first 100. We'll have to have you on quite a bit more.
Let's just start a podcast, guys. Let's just start a podcast.
What did NVK say on what Bitcoin did last night? He said, on a long enough timeline, all Bitcoiners become podcasters.
Good luck.
So far, it seems true.
Fuck. What do I do?
Mike just came up with 7 new questions.
Yeah. No, there was one thing I did want to ask, and it had to do with, you said all these podcasters are coming to light, Rock Paper Bitcoin, High Hash Rate, Bugle, all these guys are, basically we're all listening to the same stuff and we're all broadcasting, right? But it turns into this like group of like dudes talking about philosophy or talking about this or talking about that, or even doing like humor or, basically there's a cultural layer. That's what I'm getting at. So I was kind of wanted you to expand upon why you think that this cultural layer is approaching now as opposed to like a different time.
It's a function of the number of people that we have in the space. I mean, it's like with more, that's why we need more people for everything. With more humans, we can do more specialization. So yeah, like Bitcoin apparently, yeah, there's always been art and creative outlets along with Bitcoin. I mean, since Bitcoin started and people have been like, what can I do? What can I make for Bitcoin? But like there's so many, it really feels now that we have multiple podcasts now that are creating our own little cultural network of cultural hub. We have we have in jokes. This is evidence that we're winning. And like, I've been in Bitcoin since 2014, and the cultural feel of the space from like our local meetups to the private chats I'm having with guys to like the Noster chats I'm having, Telegram is like on Twitter. It's this is, yeah, we're under fire, and we're all aware that we're in danger. That there is danger here. We are like, there's sharks swimming around the water. But I mean, it's at least we're not still on the fucking ship. Like, the ship's sinking, but at least we have all chosen to jump ship, and now we're out here, and we're gonna figure out what it takes to survive.
Yeah, I think as the pressure ratchets up, we are figuring out who our friends are.
Yeah, it's the prison songs. People like the camaraderie. Like, remember in basic training, like the camaraderie you had being miserable with guys. Like, we're in a war, and like a foxhole, your foxhole buddies. Like, we're developing those right now.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever done anything in my life that really met the moment of our time. And deciding to do a podcast with Business Cat, that we didn't actually care who the fuck listened to it, and we had all the energy to do it because we cared about it. And but, like, there's no, I could tell you, the two of us didn't sit there and say, you know what, in a year and a half, this is going to meet the moment of its time and people are going to like it for what it is. I think we thought it was going to be good and did it. Most of what I've done in my life has been out of phase with the time that it's been in, right? It's probably true for most of us. So this is, I feel it. I feel that, like, we're onto something.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's important. Like, when you talk about making it for yourself, I think if you're making it for yourself, that's the most important thing. Because if you can't convince yourself, you're not going to convince anybody else. You're not gonna spark change in thought in other people.
My wife tells me that I'm starting a cult. She thinks I sound like a cult leader.
Yeah, that's...
I was like, all right. I've got conviction, baby.
That's a feature.
That's how many times I've heard this.
Yeah, that's conviction. That's all conviction. People are confused by conviction, right? It's like an innate.
No, I promise you guys, I'm not trying to bang your wives.
You have to start the cult, yeah. Yeah, see, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're trying to start a cult.
You can't just lead one. You have to start it.
Building Citadel, and invite the whitelist people to the Citadel, bang their wives.
Step in a Citadel. Everyone's invited. No dudes.
So that's what high elevation's all about.
There you go. I can't wait to listen to the next episode of your guys' podcast. To be honest, you guys sent me on so many fucking rabbit holes recently. It just kills me how many like conspiracy theories I've come in contact with since listening to this. Let's listen to you guys.
Mike, I love listening. I love, like, seeing your journey as we go through this. I was about to joke that I can't wait to listen to this episode in about 7 weeks.
We hope to bring the world into clearer focus. That is the goal. Like, clarity.
Yes.
Like, stop fucking around with fantasies and bring things into focus. Focus on what's important.
Fair enough, dudes.
We're looking for a good play. We're looking for a good out.
You're right. Here it is. Wait.
That was a good out.
Why don't you talk about your show and where to find you guys?
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. So for people out there, if you don't know who we are, so we're from the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast. I'm Business Cat. He's Fundamentals. You can find us on any, just search for Rock Paper Bitcoin on any podcasting app you listen to. Podcast that we love, Podcasting 2.0. If you don't know what that is, you should check that out and stream us at. We're on Twitter. We're not on Noster. But yeah, come check us out, or don't. You know, hey, it's your path. Do what you need to.
If you have a time machine, go back a couple of days and you can just find us in hot episodes.
If you haven't heard of us, start with episode something, Apocalyptic Equine, season 2. That's a good place to start.
Fucking hell yeah, man. I love having you guys on this show. This is so much fun.
Cool. Amen to that.
All credit. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!